Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on 720 WGN.
Hello, everyone. Karen Conti here. I hope you all had a wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving, a long weekend. I hope you had a great Black Friday, Purple Saturday, whatever it is, Cyber Monday. And now I hear there's a Tuesday Giving Day where you're supposed to give to charities. So today I think we should just call this Sit on Your Wallet Day. Don't spend any money and sit on your butt and listen to me for the next 2 hours. We have a great show. We're going to get you in the mood for the holiday in the right informative way. We're going to talk to Andrea Metcalf, who is a gifted nutritionist, personal trainer, who's going to tell you how to navigate the Christmas parties and how not to gain weight during the holidays. And then we're going to be talking to Ada Pigeot, who's going to talk about grief. We all have lost people throughout the years, and sometimes the holidays are sad for people. They've lost loved ones, parents, spouses, and even if it's not oppressive, some of those things can really bring you down. So it's not going to be a depressing segment, but we're going to be talking about how to keep those memories alive in a positive way during the holidays. And to start out with, I think Vic Cohen has been a co-host of mine for a while. Hi, Vic. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Vic is an Emmy award-winning TV writer. He's a comedian. He's an actor. He does a lot of stuff. He comes on the show, and he's quite funny. So how are you? How was your holiday?
Well, thanks for the great introduction, and it was fantastic. And how are you? You look great, by the way. You do look like you've gained a little.
Oh, I do.
Like maybe an ounce.
Okay.
No, I've never seen anyone so fit. I mean, do you do push-ups between like courses or something?
I exercise every day, pretty much. I do some aerobic, you know, but running. Running is my life. I love running. Yeah. I know it's not good for me in the long run. At some point in the long run, that was kind of a Freudian slip. But yeah, I think there's going to be a point in time where I'm going to be doing something less jolting to my joints.
Well, you look great.
Running. Thanks. But I do weights too.
Yeah, you are a champ. Come on. You don't have to play that down. You know, Karen was a award-winning champ, weren't you?
I took second in a bodybuilding competition 20 years ago.
So, yeah.
That was my one and only shot.
I believe it. I could do an eating competition and maybe get second.
How was your Thanksgiving? Did you?
It was great, but this was crazy. This was a first. I've never had this happen before. I have a great family. I really do.
And I know your family. They are great.
Oh, you've met? Yeah, they're just fantastic. But within a half hour of the Thanksgiving meal, one of the guests heaved in the sink.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it kind of put a damper on things. I guess the turkey didn't agree with him. Not exactly a compliment to the chef.
No.
Yeah. It was horrible.
That sounds horrible.
Yes.
And then what? Did he continue to eat or was he
done? Well, they ushered him home.
Oh.
And the report was he had the opposite of a second helping in the parking garage. So that is...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that was kind of the Thanksgiving that I think like I'll remember, even though I loved visiting with family.
Yeah.
But that really stuck out.
That's really unfortunate.
Yeah. How about yours?
I was just, you know, I was up in Wisconsin with my husband, and, you know, we decided we were just going to lay low, you know, and we did. We went to the Piggly Wiggly.
Nice.
I love that place. Every time you walk into a grocery store like that, you're thinking to yourself, Piggly Wiggly, really? And
how was the kosher section?
Oh, yeah. Not so much.
Very small.
They have 16,000 kinds of cheese and not so much in the kosher section. But yeah, no, I mean, you know, you have one of those like little turkeys and it's just, you know, it was fine. It was just another day. I didn't watch football. I exercised. I did some work. I calmed down and it was a nice day. And I hope everyone had
this. You talked about the, you know, this idea of like giving to charity. I think you said was like on Tuesday.
I think that's what they said. Yeah, Giving Tuesday.
I got to say this. I went to, I won't say the name of the grocery store, but it rhymes with Shmuel.
Okay.
I'll just say that. I go there and the checkout lady asked me if I would like to give to charity, donate a dollar. She goes, you know, there are children out there who are homeless. They have nothing. They've never known love. They've never had a hot meal. Can you give? And how can you not give? Right? So I gave a dollar and then she's like, you can do better. Really?
Oh, wow.
I gave $5 and
shaming.
Yeah, I was shamed into giving it. It ended up being like $15.
Well, I heard the Salvation Army was having trouble because people don't carry cash anymore. So they don't have money to put in the little bucket.
But, well, here's what I say.
So you can go online and donate
Yes, that's great. Here's my solution.
Okay.
That seven cent bag, they should grocery store should give that to charity.
I like it. Let's do it. All right.
That's
like
my
it.
Solution.
Well, the holidays are here, and a study that's published in the New England Journal of Medicine says the average American's weight will increase about a pound over Christmas and Thanksgiving, somewhere around there. And if you've been overweight or you are overweight, that could even be more. And we have one of the top fitness experts in all of the nation here with us tonight, Andrea Metcalf. She's a licensed and certified personal trainer, nutritionist, a Pilates and yoga instructor. She was a Trainer of the Year finalist. Welcome, Andrea.
Thank you so much. Wow, you make it sound so exciting.
It is exciting. Well, you know, it's exciting as working out is. But no, you have great energy. I met you on the set of Fox. You were doing a little segment, as I was, and you just do some very interesting things. So I thought, let's talk about the holidays. Let's get right into it. So what is the strategy generally going into the holidays, knowing that people, you know, they overindulge?
Well, I think it's because we've got so many parties that are coming up, and that celebration always seems to be center around food. So you've got to have some key strategies in place. You know, be mindful. It's funny because at one point in time, I remember it being 4 to 6 pounds over the holidays. So at least we're getting better, since we're already now 65% overweight, that we don't gain as much. But I think we have to think about eating before going out, or, you know, alternating that cocktail with a spritzer, water, not only for the next morning hangover prevention cure, but also for their calories, because they do get up there. You know, it's not just 120 calories a glass. It ends up being 300, 400, 500, 600, depending on what type of cocktail you imbibe in, especially when we get those nogs.
And the trouble, too, for me at least, is when I have a glass of wine, then my resistance goes down. I come there all ready with my discipline, right? And all of a sudden, I have that glass of wine, and I'm like, well, maybe we should have dessert. And of course, that whole thing the next day, you're hungrier for some reason, right? When you have that sugar.
That's right. Your blood sugar then levels go up, and then they crash, and you get less sleep. Remember, if we have a glass of alcohol, 4 to 6 hours later, we're probably waking up in the middle of the night.
Right.
Not just going to the bathroom, but then staring at the ceiling. So it slows down our metabolism. There's a lot of poor results that happen, especially in the hormonal space. So I think the key is high protein when you are at those buffets.
So give me some real good examples.
Oh, well, cocktail shrimp are always my favorite this time of year, because like 36 of them, they're 16 calories for two without the cocktail sauce. So you can have a lot of cocktail shrimp.
Sure.
I'd also go for fruits and veggies. They're always at those dipping stations. And just go lighter on the dips.
I was curious. I've got a strategy. I mean, you're the expert, but maybe this is something you could suggest in the future to your clients.
What do you got?
Duct tape.
Yeah.
Just put duct tape over your mouth. Yeah, I would do that. I just, you know, it'd have to be the right kind of situation.
Festive. Maybe they have something festive. Maybe scotch tape makes something like red and green.
That's the only thing that's going to stop me.
Well, chewing gum helps.
Ah.
Chewing gum at a party helps. Not
but
only
that's
give
obnoxious.
You fresh. Well, but if you eat mints or chewing gum, that peppermint, you tend to not want to then eat the other things, or they taste funny when you have already gum or mint in your mouth.
Well, it is a great idea, and I have a problem, Ben. I don't know if you. I wait where the people are coming out of the kitchen.
I like to get the first food. You want to be first in line.
Yeah, and I don't talk to anyone.
Wow.
Yeah, I have a problem.
Well, invite him to the party.
He's taken the social out of social gathering.
Right.
Okay, so if you're gonna do some booze, okay. You stay away from the eggnog. We all know that. So is it true that dark alcohol is not as good as the light rum, or what should we be looking at if we're going to have a drink?
I think there's two things. One, stick with your one glass alternating with water. Stick with things that have low calorie or no calorie mixers. And then the other thing I want you to think about is taking, if you do like spirits, let's not even go into brown or white, drink it on ice, so you sip it slower, so that you're not just downing it. I mean, shots obviously are not a great idea.
Right, right.
These are great tips.
Okay, so let's talk about the exercise. We're all very busy, and we're even busier during the holidays. Just a study I read saying that 68% of all people feel stressed during the holidays and are spending all this time wrapping presents, shopping, doing all these things. When is the best time to exercise? Is there a better time? Morning, noon, night? How do you do it?
Well, I mean, statistically speaking, those people who exercise first thing in the morning are more likely to stay with an exercise program. Your body, however, likes to get exercise between 2 and 3, where our circadian rhythms and cortisol levels are at their highest. But a good thing to do is schedule it do it as a group class, do it as a partner. Mm-hmm. You know, group fitness really locks us into a time and a place and people that we then can kind of make sure that we're showing up. And I, you know, don't skip it to the side.
If you only have a half an hour, you know that you have a morning half an hour. Let's just say you have access to a gym or something. You know, what should you do? Should you skip the cardio and do more weights, a little combination? What would you say?
High-intensity interval training has really gotten us some great results over the years, and the research backs that as well. So we're talking about combining like a boot camp style, weights and cardio. And remember, if you only can do one thing, make sure it's something that you like so that you stick with it. You know, don't push yourself into something that's not fun for you. If you really like running, like you said you do, Karen, then that's your go-to program over the holidays. And if you can get a little bit of weight training or stop and do some lunges or squats and push-ups and sit-ups in between or at the end of your run for 5 to 10 minutes, that's a really good strategy as well.
This is a stupid question. I admit it, but I'm just curious. Like, is there a strategy of eating? They talk about, like, you know, chew 15 times or 20 times, or is there anything with the fork? Like, lift it 3 times before you put it in your mouth?
They actually have weighted forks that weigh 10 pounds that make it a lot harder
seriously?
To get it up.
Oh my
they do.
Gosh.
They sell the weighted forks nowadays. But, you know, seriously, it's really common sense and it's common knowledge that you want to eat more fruits and vegetables, fill up on high nutrient, low calorie foods. And that's all your fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. I call it the no label diet. Anything that doesn't need a label to tell you the nutrition on it, have as much as you want, as often as you want, and you'll never go wrong.
And if you overeat, how bad could it be?
Right. Not if it's those things.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Exactly. Going back to the exercise, I know you are a yoga instructor and you do Pilates. You have a lot of different aspects to your workouts that you help and train people. You know, I'm going to say this. Yoga, I just don't get it. I mean, do you really spend an hour stretching out? Is that, if you have an hour to exercise every day, is that something that's effective? Or is it something that you need to do with in conjunction with another exercise?
Well, I mean, the information out there about yoga is that it's a stretching thing. It's actually strength training, and it goes from a forward to backward, front and back. So usually we'll work the bicep and then the tricep if we think of it in strength training ways. And a really good yoga class is going to be have that athletic style to it. Your heart rate is going to give about 120 or higher. It is going to use those muscles for stability and balance. So yes, you can get a great workout from a yoga class, just as a Pilates class. It's a different calorie burn than if I'm doing a boot camp, high intensity, or running interval class or rowing class. But absolutely, bar none, there are many people who just do yoga and are in great physical health, cardiovascular fitness-wise and strength-wise.
So let's just say you're a personal trainer, and you tell our listening audience where people can contact you and where your gym is, just so we get an idea.
So you can always check out my website, AndreaMetcalf.com, for a lot of tips and videos on how to get in shape. But I also am the founder of Studios Fuse, which houses 4 boutique fitness studios under one roof. So we have Iron and Ore Rowing, we have Kick at 55 boot camps, we have Sproing Running and Power classes, and then I own Hang 5 Fitness, where we take surfboards and we do a surf experience class that's really athletic and challenging. And then we also do bar Pilates, which is low impact, challenging, and yoga classes. And that lower impact, because I'm in my 50s now, I really embrace.
Great.
I mean, I've been teaching fitness for 35 years when the thong was on the outside and headbands and, you know, music CDs were not available.
Leg warmers, cuts
right?
To say, right?
Oh my gosh, all those things. So I've been doing it a long time and it just feels better on my body.
So if people, I see them at the health club, and I have been trained, so I know, and I did a bodybuilding competition, so I know a little bit about working out and what's efficient and what's not. Not everything, but for you, tell us why a person could use a personal trainer, because I think a lot of people go into the gym and waste time. Do you think that's the case?
I do think it's the case. I mean,
yeah.
I see it when I'm on vacations and I watch people and what they do, and I'm like, don't do that. Don't pull that bar behind your head. Oh, your
yes.
back's going to go out by doing those knee swings.
Right.
I think a personal trainer at least once to get you started will help make you more aware of your areas that are going to be susceptible to injury. And as we age, that low back, hip, and knees, those are our vulnerable points. Not to mention nowadays, because of our phone, we've got that tech head, that forward 8 to 10 pound head forward, that now the neck and shoulders tend to be a really vulnerable spot for many people. And injury is the worst thing, because when you're in pain, you don't want to move, and most likely it's the thing you need to do to get better.
And I have to say that having a trainer also taught me how far I can take it. Because sometimes people are afraid to lift a heavy weight. And not to say that you're going to just go and lift it and start going crazy on it, but that it's much more effective sometimes to lift a heavy weight fewer times than to lift a little 5-pound weight 100 times. So, you know, training you how to use your time correctly and know what you can do.
I have a question. I'm just curious, because when I hear personal trainer, I immediately feel like I think this is going to be very expensive. Now, is there a way to have a personal trainer where, like, it can accommodate a budget? You know what I'm saying?
I think the best thing to do is try and get a trial, even like a 15 or 20 minute. And especially this time of year, as we move into January and the whole new year thing, that there is that trial that you can get somebody to take an eye at you. And then, of course, you've got partner training, smaller group classes, but really one-on-one at least once is something you should look at.
I was just thinking another thing is if you invest that money, you're going to be saving money and health problems down the road.
Right. No, so other, it's another investment appreciates like you were in your
Absolutely.
Health.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Andrea Metcalf, give everyone your contact information again.
Hey, check it out at andreametcalf.com, hang5fitness.com. I'll see you guys at either place, and hope you can come work out with us over the holidays.
I would love to do that. Andrea, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Happy holidays to you. Welcome back to the Karen Conti Show. Andrea Metcalf, she was great, wasn't she, Vic? She's
amazing. I'm literally taking notes.
Yeah, she's just full of really good energy. We had a caller from the 773 actually text her. When going to a party, I wear my Invisalign. It prevents me from eating or drinking red wine.
Smart.
Is it smart?
I love it.
I'm all for it. Yeah, full headgear, like a full Hannibal Lecter headgear.
Or I was thinking that.
Or catcher's mask.
I like that too. Or the hockey mask, the goalie mask.
And see, no one will flirt with you, so you won't have that problem, right?
It's a conversation starter.
You can't eat, you can't drink. You'll be a designated driver.
But everyone will think
and
you're
think
drunk.
Think of those pictures.
Oh my God, yeah. Or the Freddy Cougar? That's that mask.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you'll probably not be asked back to
and
the next party.
You can use it for Halloween 2019.
Yeah, it's a great plan.
It's all a good thing.
I like it.
Well, we're going to get a little serious here, but not too serious. Holidays are a time where a lot of people feel like they should be having a great time, and sometimes they aren't because they are grieving. They're thinking about loved ones who have passed away, children, spouses, parents, friends, sometimes even pets. And you lose that ability to celebrate, and holidays will magnify those losses and make you feel sadder and lonely. Here to discuss this issue is Ada Pigeot, who is with Beverly Therapist. She's a licensed clinical social worker, graduate of University of Chicago. Among many other things, Ada counsels adults experiencing loss of spouse in a wide variety of circumstances. Welcome to the show, Ada. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Karen.
Is it true that during the holidays you have a lot of people come to you because of these issues being magnified?
Definitely.
Yes, go ahead.
Definitely. You know, there are people who are already in treatment with me and who want to come to talk about their losses at this time of the year. And one of the things that are very difficult for people during this time of the year is the fact that there has been a breakdown in tradition. And so, you know, people are accustomed to celebrating in a certain way year after year, you know, fortified by years of holding on to that foundation, to that tradition. And they find it very hard sometimes to adjust to these changes.
And Ada, I'm going to just kind of a full disclosure here for listeners that have known me. My husband of 21 years died suddenly about 7-8 years ago. And my current husband also had a wife who died. He was with her for 40 years. So we met each other on a blind date and things have been wonderful ever since. But we both have experienced loss and experienced grief. And one of the things that you mentioned that really resonated with me is the tradition, because of course you miss that person, you miss the essence of the person and the friendship and the companionship, but you miss the traditions and you miss the getting up in the morning and sharing coffee and going to work together or whatever it is you share. That routine becomes disrupted, and that adds to the problem, not obviously.
It does. And the routine is what saddens people. You know, I remember last weekend I have a client who lost her spouse, and she said Thanksgiving morning, I was very sad because I woke up and I'm not cooking. And I'm so accustomed to cooking for 15 years. So the reality changes.
So if you're going to counsel people, if there are people out there who maybe are going through a first or a second round of holidays and they know that this is going to be an issue, what are the things you tell people to do, and what are the pieces of advice you can give to people?
The number one I say is to set boundaries. And that means including having self-care and self-compassion in this time of the year, and while grieving, because grieving is hard work, it's very stressful. And for some people, there's not a lot of support to be had. And so self-care is number one, and setting boundary is a part of that self-care.
Be specific when you say that. What would you say a boundary would be, for instance?
Okay, for instance would be if you don't feel like cooking, don't cook. Go out to eat. There are many places now that are serving buffets. For example, if you are invited to go to a dinner somewhere, set boundaries. Maybe you can only stay for half an hour.
Okay. And this is always a question that that I dealt with during my grieving process, and that is, I always felt better when I got out and did something, but I didn't want to go out and do something. So people would drag me out, and I would resent them for it, but then I would thank them for it. So how do you, you know, do you tell people just go with how you feel and stay home, and or do you tell them to kind of push themselves and maybe, like you say, not stay for 10 hours, but stay for just an hour, or tell yourself I can leave at a time that I feel comfortable?
Yeah, I tell people that when you're grieving, hard and fast rules don't apply.
Right.
And I also tell them don't do what I tell them to do. I tell them do it the way Frank tells them to do. You know, Frank Sinatra sings that song, "Do It Your Way." You know, I did it my way, and so I think the one thing to honor is self-care.
And when you say self-care, tell our audience what that means.
That means get enough sleep, continue to put good things in your body, continue to exercise if you can. Continue to have conversations with people who care and can give you good guidance.
Okay. And at what point does grieving? Now, grieving, if the word grieving is kind of, it's an all-encompassing word, but there's pain and then there's grieving. And grieving is a process, to me, that doesn't necessarily stop. Am I right? If someone in your life dies, you never really stop grieving for them.
I think that's right, Karen. I think that's very right. And the one thing that I want to emphasize here is that grief is a response to love and to the loss of the loved ones. And the one thing with that is that grief is a response when we lose someone significant to us. And in the grieving process, there are a few components to take into consideration. And one of it, like you correctly mentioned, is the emotional component. And so you feel saddened by it. You feel sharp, throbbing pain sometimes. And then sometimes it also involves physical component as well. So, you know, it's not uncommon that doctors would find that people who are grieving would arrive at the hospital having symptoms like chest pains or feeling hollow in their stomach or having a constriction in their throat. And it's also cognitively based. Grief is also involved cognition, meaning that you can't believe that your loved one just passed away, you know. You are preoccupied with your loved ones.
And makes it hard to concentrate
right.
At many times.
And also grief involves a behavioral component, which means that sometimes you get into a mode where you just prefer to isolate yourself.
I'm going to give out the numbers here. If anyone has any questions or comments for Ada, I'm sure we would like to hear them. 981-7200. Call us at 981-7200. And right before we go to the break, I just want to... One of the things you said was it's a response to love. Grieving is a response to love. And I suppose, and we talked about this a little before the show, if you didn't love someone, you probably wouldn't be feeling this bad.
Absolutely.
And I don't know how that makes you feel better when you're going through it, but I think it's interesting to recognize that it's part of the process. If you love somebody, whoever you love right now may pass away before you, and you have to come to grips with the fact that part of that is going to be very, very sad at some point, whether it's your parents or your spouse, and it's part of life. Now, does that make you feel better necessarily? It makes you understand it better.
I think grief is a the pain, the dull pain, you know, that will never go away, will never leave our hearts, is the price we pay for love. So in that sense, you're absolutely right. And that doesn't diminish, you know, with when someone passes away. So I always say that death ends a life. It doesn't end a relationship. That love continues, right? And so during the holidays, my guidance would be to celebrate love, because our loved ones once lived. They did not just die.
Thank you so much. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk some more about the grieving process during the holidays.
Did you know my name? If I saw you in heaven.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Karen Conti Show. We're talking about grief during the holidays, and we're here with Ida Pigott, who's going to be just explaining a little bit about what she does when she counsels people who are grieving during the holidays. I'm here also with Vic Cohen, who's co-hosting tonight.
Hey there. This has been really great. I was just curious, Ida. So my parents are, thank God, they're healthy, but I've since childhood been worried about them, and I'm just curious, you know, when people are alive who you love, are there things you can do that will make the grieving process down the road easier? So in other words, like, I spend as much time with my family, my parents, as possible, so that one day, if that were to happen, which it statistically is likely, I will know that I won't look back and feel like, oh, I didn't do enough, I didn't spend enough time.
I think that's a very thoughtful approach, Vic. I think that's a very sensitive approach. I also want to add that emotions are very hard to anticipate. But what I hear you say, Vic, is that it would probably, you know, release you from feeling a lot of guilt because you have done all that you could for your parents.
Yeah, and yes, and that I savored every minute.
Because, I mean, you do hear that quite a bit when you have somebody who maybe doesn't treat their parents very well or doesn't keep in contact. When that person dies, they feel horrendous guilt about what they did or didn't do. And, you know, that's not to say you're nice to your parents because you don't want to feel guilt, because you want to
no,
do it.
No, it is. That's all it is.
Well, that's
not
a Jewish
true.
Thing.
Yeah.
It's a Jewish
no,
thing.
No, it's not true. I do it because I love them, yeah.
Yeah. No, you do it because you love them. But I do hear that and see that, and it can tear people up. Even just little things that they forgot to do, they dwell on those, right, on those guilty thoughts about they should have done this, they should have made that one last stop.
Yeah, and guilt is one of those that you say can tear people apart, even when they have done enough in some cases.
Sure.
Because guilt is not about, really, about doing enough or not doing enough. But in these cases where death is involved, it's about wishing to do more. And the opportunity to do more is not there anymore because death robs us of that opportunity.
That's right. We have a texter from Urbana who says, grief comes and goes as it will. Check out On Death and Dying and DABDA by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. However, grief isn't always associated with death. Now I've lost parents and a sister, Tim from Urbana. So speaking of books, do you recommend those books, or are there any books for people out there who might find reading something about this helpful?
I don't have a particular recommendation. I have a few websites that I like to share with people.
Okay.
Initially, when I started to do grief work, my work was informed by Dr. Ellen Wolfelt. And
can you spell that? I'm just curious.
Wolfelt.
Okay, and she writes about grief. And
it's a he, actually.
That's a he?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's a pretty prominent name in the field of.
Do you know what we're going to do? Let's post that on our website. Okay. Instead of you giving it out, we'll have Ben post it so everyone can see it. Mm-hmm. How's that?
Yeah. But I want to encourage people to actually drop down into their hearts and feel their emotion, because processing pain is a very important task of grieving. And intellectualizing, which is reading books or articles on it, is nice and you can get information, but intellectualization is also a defense from feeling emotions.
Oh, interesting.
So one of the things that I would encourage people to do is drop into their hearts, process that sadness, that anger, that rage, you know, that guilt, that hopelessness, loneliness, and all kinds of emotion that comes in waves when one is grieving.
And, you know, that's, I'm going to inject a little bit of my own experience. And, Jerry, I'm going to have you weigh in here, too. I think one of the things that I did looking back to that really bad time, you know, it's grieving is always is still going on with losses of my parents and my spouse. But I that horrible time, that first 6 months, that first year, I remember what I would do is I would go to work, I'd get up every day, I'd exercise, I'd be healthy, I would do a whole full day of work, and then I'd go home and I'd spend an hour grieving. And I would cry, and I would do whatever I needed to do in a room by myself, and then I would be done with it. You know, and I'd say, I'm going to do this again tomorrow. Or sometimes on the weekend, when I had a lot of time, I'd just sit and I'd just face it, because during the day I didn't have the time to do it, and I knew that I needed to just kind of get away from it, because wallowing in it to me really brought me down and made me unhealthy and made me sick, physically sick. So that sort of worked for me. I don't know, is that a plan that you hear people use?
Yeah, and what I've heard is this oscillation, right, between still taking care of the activities of daily living, like what would still bring you pleasure, and I'm happy that you could do that, while at the same time not neglecting or avoiding your grief. And I think when people do run into most significant problems down the road is when they don't do grief work, when grief is swept under the rug, when people busy themselves all the time, and the coping mechanism there is actually avoidance.
Yes. And then it comes out somewhere else in some other bad place,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
So, Jerry, I thought we'd weigh onto this, because this is a topic that we found very interesting, both having gone through having lost a spouse. People said, and this is switching topics a little bit, about how to help others go through the grieving process. So if you know someone who's lost a relative and you're sitting there, it's Christmas time, and you want to help them, what should you do? And Jerry and I shared a few things that people said to us that they did not mean to hurt us, but were kind of hurtful and maybe insensitive. What were some of those things, Jerry, we can talk about?
I think the worst one that people said to me all the time, and I'm guilty of saying this to people before I lost my wife, is they're in a better place. They're not in a better place. They're dead. Simple as that. Now, you may magically think, if you're religious, that they're somewhere in a better place. And
but I wonder if that still helps if you're religious, because people said that to me, and I felt the same way.
Yeah.
Like I wanted to say, no, he's not.
Right.
This place was just fine for all involved.
That's how I felt, yes.
Yeah.
And the other thing, I was with my wife 40 years. It took, unlike your case where Greg, your husband, went to bed at night, in the morning he had passed away. My wife took 4 years to die, and I died with her a little bit every day. And at the end, when she was at peace, I wasn't. I had to go on. I had to move forward. And people actually said to me, wow, you're a really good man that you stayed with her during those 4 years while she was dying. I'm like, are you out of your mind?
Yeah.
Why would you even say that to me?
But, how about this one? You're still young enough so you can move forward. And tell me when you're dating again, because I can set you up with people.
Yeah.
I got that right from the beginning. And I'm telling you, maybe they think, okay, you know, I'll help her. This is my way of helping her. But boy, did I take offense to that.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm sure you've heard all these different stories from people and from that you're counseling, but what should you do for somebody who is grieving, who have lost a loved one?
Ask them. You know, your loved ones is at a better place, and for you, Jerry, the better place would be if she's still in your arms.
Exactly.
And alive. I would say ask, where do you imagine your loved ones is right now? You know, because death overturns a lot of our assumptions, you know, and also our beliefs, you know, and sometimes it validates it. You know, for example, people who once believed in God are no longer believers because they had to bury a child.
Yes, right. Yeah.
But sometimes our assumptions is validated. You know, I have clients who tell me that my mom just passed away and that's why I'm here, but she lived a long life. Like she should have. She lived up to 92 years old.
Yeah. Ada, can you give us out your contact information? I have to go right now and take a break and come back and answer legal questions. How can people contact you?
They can visit our website at www.beverlytherapist.com. That's BEVERLY, therapist with a plural, .com.
Thank you so much for joining us, and I hope you helped some people here during the holidays.
Thank you, Karen.
She's legally blonde and brilliant. Karen Conti, attorney at law, is taking your legal questions right now. Call 312-981-7200. That's 312-981-7200.
Breaking rocks in a hot tub, I'm on the Lord.
Yes, this is the time you can call in and ask a legal question. Anything that you might have, if it's family law, traffic court, criminal, or maybe it's a news story you saw and you want some input. Maybe it's some new law or something that you saw and you have some questions about. Anything you might want to ask me, I'll do my best to give you an answer or steer you in the right direction. 981-7200 or text to 981-7200. And if you don't get through, you can always call me at my office, which is 312-332-7800, 332-7800, or better yet, send me an email so I can get back to you with maybe a referral or some information or a website that'll help you. And that email address is wgn@askkarenconti.com, KarenConti, askkarenconti.com. You know, we were just, I'm here with Vic Cohen, who's kind of co-hosting tonight. We talked to the grief counselor, which was really interesting, and I hope that helps people. I think just talking about things like that, knowing that you're not the only person going through a hard time during the holidays is important. But I had wonderful texter who said, my mother recently died and my therapist sent this, and he actually or she actually put it, it's like with little on the bulletin board with the little push pins. It says, quote, grief never ends, but it changes. It's a passage, not a place to stay. Grief is not a sign of weakness nor a lack of faith. It is the price of love. You know, yeah. And we kind of touched on some of those issues,
yeah.
And I think that's just really, really beautiful. But thank you for sharing that with us. Anyway, so Vic, let's go to legal questions.
Great.
You know what I want to talk about? I had a texter this week saying, I have a small family-owned business, and I'm trying to figure out bonuses. I would like to give larger bonuses to a few of my employees based on their good performance and how long they've worked for me, but do I have to be careful not to discriminate?
That's confusing to me. What does that mean, not discriminate against who?
Well, that's interesting because you can discriminate as an employer. You just can't discriminate based upon certain things like female and male. You can't discriminate based upon age. Someone who's over 40, you can't treat them differently. You can't treat African-Americans different than Caucasians. You can't treat people of a certain national origin or a certain religion. So these are protected classes, and you can't discriminate based upon those criteria. But you can discriminate in giving a bonus based upon this person's worked for me for 20 years. The other person only worked for me for 6 months. Of course I can give my 20-year person a better bonus because she's been with me and she's tried and true and she comes in, you know, on the weekends and she works hard.
Well, that's confusing to me. The question is, if this person's a business owner, like I'm, you know, it's, I don't know, it seems like, isn't that part of what business is? You always give bonuses based, I would think, on work performance. I mean, are we at that place now where someone's going to sue because we're given a bonus and someone else wasn't?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds kind of fundamental, but let's just say, let's just change the facts a little bit, and I'm not quite sure this guy's business, but let's just say there's a bonus based upon what we call these are, there's discretionary and non-discretionary bonuses, which non-discretionary bonuses are more like commissions. So let's just say if you sell a certain amount of widgets, you get 10% of the purchase price as a bonus or a commission. And let's just say that you don't give that to all your employees. That might, and you do it based upon race. Or you do it for women and you don't do it for men. Or you don't do it for age of 40, et cetera. That could be deemed to be discriminatory because you have a plan for giving bonuses, but it doesn't apply to all employees equally.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you're right, it's Christmas time. I might want to pay someone, I might want to give someone a bigger bonus because they went out of their way this year for me for some reason. You know, I might. So that you're free to do. Based upon merit or any other topic, any other criteria other than those protected classes.
Yeah, it's interesting though we've come that far, like that deep in this, where that really is a legitimate question.
Well, and I think that this texter really is concerned about it for the right reasons. I think he's okay to say it, or she's okay to say, yeah, I'm going to give $1,000 to my tried and true 20-year person, but maybe I'll give a bottle of wine to the person who's been with me for 6 months. That's fine, unless there is some other factor there other than, you know, non-discriminatory. When I say we're all discriminating, because you can discriminate, that wrongful discrimination, I guess we should say. Mm-hmm. So, interesting.
Yeah.
Let's give a...
Timely.
Yeah.
Bonuses are being figured out as we speak.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, the employees are getting nicer, too. Did you notice that? let's see. Now, you know, I'm gonna read this, but I don't know the answer to it. Karen, have you seen the second season of Making a Murder on Netflix? If so, what do you think of Kathleen Zellner's new evidence in the Stephen Avery case? Ooh, I followed that case. I know Kathleen Zellner. She's a fabulous lawyer. She's a very aggressive, very, very good lawyer. And I don't know the new evidence. So if someone wants to call in and tell me what the new evidence is, I'd like to discuss that. It's a fascinating case.
I haven't seen the new series, but I loved the first incarnation of that series. And I the thing I have to remind myself is that this is first and foremost entertainment. This is on Netflix. So anything I see through editing can be tell a story that the creators want to tell. And so from that, I thought the younger guy got totally railroaded, who was ending up still sitting in a Wisconsin prison.
Yeah.
But I didn't see all the tape. You know, we only see what they want us to see.
Right. Right.
And that's a big deal.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Let's see. We've got a texter from the 616. Where is that? Is that San Diego?
That sounds far away.
Oh, 619. Oh, no, I think this is Michigan. If someone is salaried, paid overtime is earned after 50 hours, routinely works 70 to 72 hours a week. If paid overtime isn't approved on a timely manner, is there any recourse? I'm not quite sure I understand the question, but I think what the question is if from an employer standpoint, if someone is working overtime, but they're not, but the employer isn't approving, like the employer didn't say, I approve that you can work over 40 hours this week. Do you then have to pay overtime? And the answer is yes. And I was involved in a case once where employees were regularly just working overtime, and the employer had a whole clock that said you can't work overtime. It had a policy, and it said you can't work overtime, but they were working overtime. And the Department of Labor said, that person worked overtime, you have to pay that person. So they take that very, very seriously, and you should have policies in place that try to prevent people from working overtime if that's what you don't want to have happen. And a lot of employers, I understand, it gets very expensive when people are working overtime.
Well, also, Karen, isn't this a great example of why it's important for an employer to have a employee handbook that from the company, so that these kind of rules are stated, you know, like when you got to inform me the company if you're working overtime in a timely manner.
Absolutely.
Or there is no overtime.
It should be spelled out. Well, you can't say that.
Okay.
But what you could do, I mean, conceivably, is to say, if you're not getting pre-approval for this, that could be grounds for termination because you're not following the laws and not following the rules of the workplace. Mm-hmm. So we have rules of the workplace. You have to follow them. And if you don't follow them, we could fire you because if you don't want people working overtime, you have a right as an employer to tell people not to. If they do it, you have to pay them. So very interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to give out the numbers again, 981-7200. Any legal question you might have, 981-7200. This is the Karen Conti Show. I'm here with Vic Cohen. All right, this is your time. The phone lines are wide open. We have Ben, who is the producer, who's taking your calls. You're going to talk to him. You're going to tell him briefly what your legal question is and see if you can sum it up as quickly as you can. And we'll get you right on the air, and I'll try to help you with your legal question. I've been practicing law for about, I think I'm going on 33 years this year. Wow, wow, wow. And I've kind of practiced in a lot of different areas and different times of my life. So I can probably weigh in on something or other that you have or help you get to the right direction. 981-7200. And again, I'm going to give you my office email address in case you don't want to speak on the air. And that is WGN@AskKarenConti.com. Ben, should I take the call here or should I? You're still talking. Okay. Vic Cohen is with me tonight. He's kind of co-hosting. And you had a legal question that arose with a friend of yours that you wanted to bring to my attention.
Yes. It was total chaos at the Cohen Thanksgiving dinner over this question. And I didn't tell them, but I thought to myself, I got to bring this to Karen. Here's the question. I have a friend. They slipped in a restaurant in the lobby. The slipping was their fault. It just was an act of God, let's say.
Okay.
No culpability there. However, when she landed, she hit the ground and her leg hit a sign, one of those please wait to be seated signs. The base of the sign is metal, a square piece of metal.
Yeah.
And it sliced open her leg, requiring multiple stitches, ambulance ride. She's still recovering. So the debate was, we had some people at the table who were like, well, it's not the restaurant's fault. What are they going to do? Put a seatbelt on her so she doesn't fall out of a chair? You know, and but I don't think it matters whether the slip part, it's the sign and the fact she was injured. Does she have a case?
You know, and this is something that is going to be fact-based, and it's going to be something where she probably wants to take some pictures of the area, because the issue is when you go into a restaurant or a store, they have to take reasonable actions to make you safe, okay? And they have to do what's reasonably foreseeable. And if it's foreseeable that someone could bump into that sign, knock it down, or slip and fall and have that sign topple over, then they have a reason, they have a duty to make sure that that sign is anchored securely, that it's not dangerous to people if it were to fall, that maybe they should have used plastic or something with rounded edges as opposed to something that could cut a person. I'd also want to know what the lobby of the restaurant or wherever this area was. Was it congested with people? Were there people who could have knocked this down anyway, even if she hadn't fallen? So these are going to be issues that will eventually a personal injury lawyer will look at those things and look at those pictures and determine whether there's a case to say that the restaurant was negligent. And so what I would suggest to you, Vic, is to have your friend call me. Probably email me at WGN@AskKarenConti.com. And I have a lawyer in mind who does a lot of slip and fall cases. In fact, he represented a client of mine in a case not similar in that there was no sign, but it was a slip and fall in a restaurant. And there were some problems with the pavement outside. And so he's very, very good at slip and falls. He knows his stuff. And he mm-hmm. will tell you if there's no case. If he looks at it and says, you know what? Lawyers don't, contrary to what you think, lawyers don't waste their time on frivolous cases because these are cases you take on a contingent basis, which means lawyers don't get paid until they recover, whether it's a settlement or a verdict. So why would they waste their time? Why would they spend money out of their pocket to handle a case for what might be 2 years when they go to a jury and they're going to get zip? You know,
right.
So these lawyers that I deal with are very good lawyers. They're very trustworthy lawyers. They're not going to waste your time. And you should send her over to me, and I will definitely refer.
I will do that. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks.
That's an interesting one. All right. Let's go to the phone lines here. 981-7200. Jeff, welcome to the Karen Conti Show.
Hey, Karen. How you doing?
Good. What's your legal question?
I have been dating my boyfriend for almost 10 years now,
okay.
And he was brought here from Mexico by his parents when he was about 5, and so he signed up for DACA protections as soon as it was offered under Obama, and I basically wanted to see what the process was to get married. I know it's not as simple as just going down to City Hall. Someone had said that it was that at some point you have to go back to Mexico and stay there for a few days and maybe try to come through customs again, because they never technically went through customs.
Okay, this is going to be an area that I can't give you specific advice. It kind of crosses two lines here. It's the immigration issue, and it's the marriage issue. The marriage issue, I can tell you, yeah, sure, you can get married, since the Supreme Court has said that gay marriages are legal all over the country. So the question is, how do you do this to make sure that your boyfriend will be able to reap the benefits of getting married to you, which hopefully will be that he can become a citizen if that's what he wants to do, and that he doesn't have to go back to Mexico, because that's the last thing in the world you want.
I've heard some stories, that especially since Trump came in, that people, because at some point you have to cross back to the, I don't really understand it, but you have to cross back over and come back to customs, and at this point they can, that custom agent actually has the power, all the power. He can say, no, you can't come back in, even if you have all this paperwork in tow, you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
So you want to make sure. Right.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure about that. And so I guess what you probably want to do is why don't you send me an email, Jeff, and tell me the situation. What's your boyfriend's name?
His name's Alonzo.
Okay, Alonzo, tell me what his status is exactly in that email, because I don't do immigration, so whenever I have an immigration issue that deals with marriage, which they do intersect quite a bit, I usually bring in a really good immigration lawyer to make sure that I'm doing things that are going to work out in the long run, and I'm not going to impact someone's ability to stay in the country. And you got to be very careful.
Okay.
And it's good that you're doing this, because that's the last thing you want. So tell me Alonzo's status, you know, when he came, you know, what your situation is, and I will forward this to the right person to see if we can get a really good answer for you. Okay?
What's your email address, Karen?
Sure. It's WGN at... AskKarenConti.com. Ask Karen, K-A-R-E-N, Conti, C-O-N-T-I.
.com. Got you.
Okay.
All right. Thanks so much for your help.
And good luck to you. And happy holidays.
You're great. Thank
you. All right.
Bye-bye.
Interesting. Very interesting. When you live in a big city, lawyers kind of concentrate in different areas. And so what happens is, like, if I practiced in a smaller town, I probably would know a lot of different things having to do with this. I probably know immigration. I probably know taxation. But because we specialize, kind of concentrate our practices, sometimes you need to get a crossover lawyer to come in and try to help you who has better, you know, better knowledge of the area, because I just don't.
It's so complex also, and it's political.
And it changes all the time, and he's right. You know, when you have an issue like immigration, which has changed since Donald Trump has been president, you want to make sure that you have the right statute and you have the right law and how it's being enforced, not just how it's written, but how actually it's going to be enforced in practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so in Jeff's case, I mean, he's going to want to take really proactive steps to make sure that he seals the deal here in a way that's not going to harmfully impact his partner. So,
yeah. Everything becomes more real with this whole immigration stuff when you hear his call.
Yeah.
You know, it's personal.
Absolutely. I'm just going to do a really quick text that I got earlier this week, and then we're going to go to break, but please give us a call. We're going to go for the next half an hour answering legal questions, 981-7200. I got an email from text from a man who works delivering truckloads of materials. He gets paid in part by the truckload. The employer stopped paying and he quit his job. Now he knows he's owed money, but he doesn't know how much. What should he do? Can he recoup whatever lost wages that he is owed? And I said, yes, you can go online and look at the Illinois Department of Labor, the Wage Claim Division. You fill out a claim, give them all the information that you have about what you delivered, about what the policy was, if there was a written policy, and they will investigate it. There's no charge for it, and hopefully they will investigate it and find in your favor, and will make the employer pay your wages. I think this is my last show before the new year. I think I am preempted continuously until January, which is really sad. So get your calls in now is my point. Get your calls in. Any legal questions you might have, 312-981-7200, 981-7200. I'm here with Vic Cohen. Vic, you're holding out over there?
Yeah, you know, that guy who talked the text about not getting paid.
Yes.
It reminded me in Los Angeles, I was working on a show, and the guy was a total, he was just not ethical and horrible. I mean, literally, I'm not trying to badmouth the guy. The guy went to prison after I left. I mean,
okay.
He was terrible. He never paid his rent. And anyway, so the guy didn't pay me for my last week of work, and he said he would only if I signed all these papers saying that anything I came up with was theirs and they owned it. I'd already done the work. You know, I mean,
wow.
I didn't sign anything, and I just figured, you know what? This guy, this is the risk you take when you work with someone who's shoddy.
It's a shame. And the people who are affected most by unpaid wages are the people who are working as waitresses, who are working as maids, who are working, you know, doing work like that. And a lot of them think, you know, the person may not be legal, or the person doesn't speak English very well, so I'm just going to stiff him, and what is he going to do about it? And the Department of Labor is supposed to, and they do a pretty good job of going in there and investigating, and there's all kinds of, you know, attorney's fees and treble damages and things that can be levied against an employer. But, you know, when you're working for a small company, too, you sometimes don't have another option. So you stay with them even if they're not paying you overtime or they're not paying you what they're supposed to be paying. Because you need your job and you want your job.
Well, one thing I learned is if you're working for a boss, or if I'm working for a boss who's unethical and treats others very poorly, as I saw back in Los Angeles with this guy, I'm not special.
You're not special.
It will come at some point.
I totally agree with you.
And I used to think, oh, well, that wouldn't happen to me because, you know, whatever. And sure enough, when it, you know, like at the deli, my number came up. Sure enough, I got totally, treated like
that is a very good way to look at it, and I totally agree with you, because if someone has that kind of antisocial, you know, sociopathic behavior, you're not going
to
be special.
I'm
not
going to
be singled out. You're not going to be singled
out. What's my part? Because I don't want to play a victim all the time. Sometimes I'm not. You know, in that case, I was kind of a complicit.
Well, I wouldn't say
by
that.
Sticking around.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to go to the calls now. 981-7200 or text me. I think this is a Karen. Are you a Karen?
Yes.
Are you a Karen that spells it the right way, K-A-R-E-N?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's good. People that spell it wrong.
I just have a quick question.
Okay, here we go.
I know Illinois state law, you're required that, you know, your employer is required, you have to take a lunch of at least 30 minutes or something after 5 hours of work. Now, what's the law if you work after your lunch, like, another 10 hours?
Oh.
You get a buffet.
Yeah. Yeah, you should get a buffet.
I mean, do you get 2 15-minute breaks, or are they required to give you another half-hour lunch within 5 hours? Or,
you know, that's a good question, and I don't know the answer, but I will get you the answer to that. My understanding is that you get 15 minutes every certain number of hours, but if you're going to work another 10 hours, that's kind of off the charts, and I don't know exactly.
Throwing that out there, because sometimes it's 8 hours after that. I mean, you know, it's a long time after you have a lunch.
Right. Let me do this. I will get you an answer to that question. Can you send me an email, and I'll get right back to you, probably even tonight.
Okay.
know exactly where I'm going. I have a little chart on this that tells you exactly, because those rules are not in my head. It's one of those things where I always have to consult with the Illinois state rules and the federal rules. If you send me an email.
Yeah, I tried looking that up, and I couldn't really find it.
Yep, I can lay my hands on it very quickly. So,
okay.
I'm going to, Ben, can you give her my WGN at Ask Karen Conti? Can you do that?
And it probably won't be emailed tonight because it's late. I have to get up early for work.
To work your 18-hour day.
She's got
to
pack her lunches.
Yeah, you better pack your lunch.
Right.
Okay, Karen, well, send me an email. Ben will give you the number. I'm going to put you on hold here, okay? Here we go. All right. That's a good question. And, you know, I don't know the answer when it goes past the 8 hours, and I'd have to look that up and make sure. There's both the federal and the state law. So the federal law provides certain protections, but the state laws can provide better protections, and so you have to check both of them to make sure that you know the answer to that question, which I don't know off the top of my head. I could have made something
up. But the worst part is if you say something and now you're scared that your boss is going to, you know, be very annoyed.
Well, right.
And have there be other repercussions.
And that could be a problem. And sometimes it's best to get employees together to say, listen, we understand this is our right. Can you make sure that we get our break? Because I can't go 8 hours without having a break. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on WGN. How are you?
Oh, good. I'm good. I really enjoy your show, Karen. Thank you for having it.
And happy holidays. What is your legal question?
My question is, I have 4 checks that are over 10 years old from a financial settlement, and I'm wondering, they're from my mom. I went through her stuff. Can they still be cashed?
Ooh, that's interesting.
Or do I have to go back to the person that
who wrote the checks?
Did them,
yeah.
And if so, are they liable to re-give a check?
Yes, they. What you should do is, I think that you should just try to cash them or to deposit them or whatever you're going to do with them. I don't know. Do you have power of attorney and do you have all the documents necessary for you to be able to deposit them on your mother's behalf?
I do, but I think somewhere on there they say after 60 days they're not valid.
You know, they
do. So I'm worried that they will just bounce back.
Yeah, they do.
Are you sure it doesn't say after 60 years? It's a fair question.
Well, you know, I have seen this happen where the checks are stale, but they still are honored. Okay, so my advice to you would probably be just to see if they will be honored. If they come back and they say they're stale, then I think you need to try to get them reissued. And how much money is it worth altogether, Chris?
$10,000.
Okay, so that's enough to. And are these coming from a bank? Are these coming from an insurance company or a law firm? Where are they coming from?
It's a bank on a settlement from a financial situation.
Okay. And the problem with that, and I've seen that, where the banks now have changed hands, and sometimes the banks don't want to honor if the bank has now changed hands and they're now a new bank. But I would see if they would just honor it. And I've told people to do that, and sometimes it's worked and sometimes it hasn't. Now, 10 years is a long time. And, you know, but you should be able to get them reinstated, and perhaps you can prevail upon the attorney that handled it or some other attorney to try to make that happen. I take it your mother just sort of hoarded the checks and just didn't pay attention to it, and now you're looking at her estate documents and you're seeing this. Is that what happened?
Pretty much so, but would I go to, we don't really have an attorney, would I go to, if I'm going to do what you said and try and have them just cashed, but if they bounce back, would I go to the person that, you know, wrote them to reinstate them?
That could be what you need to do.
Okay.
So why don't you take this in layers? Try your self-help first, and if you need a lawyer to call and try to get them to honor it, call me, and maybe either I can do it or I can find someone who can do that for you. Okay, Chris?
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay,
have
good
a great
luck.
Night.
Okay, you too.
Bye.
Take care. All right, we're going to take a break now, and when we come back, we're going to finish up with some legal questions, and maybe we're going to play some of the world's worst Christmas carols if we have time. That sounds like fun, doesn't
it? Yeah,
yeah. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN.
I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. Don't want a doll, no dinky tinker toy. I want a hippopotamus to play with and enjoy. I want a hippopotamus.
Okay. Okay, so if you hang up to the very bitter end of my show, we are going to do the worst Christmas carols ever. And that was one of them. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Is that annoying or what? That's really annoying. And so let's hold that to the end.
And I've got a question maybe we could answer at the end. What is the most recorded Christmas song by all artists? Like, it's not one particular.
Rudolph.
No. No.
Jingle Bells.
No. You're close.
Jingle Bells. I Wish You a Merry Christmas.
Do you want to know?
Yes.
Are you ready? Silent Night.
Silent Night.
Over 19,041 different recordings.
Interesting. So now I know.
Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy. Wow.
That's a lot.
That's a beautiful song. Yeah. And by the way, the last caller called in about checks that were written to her mother for a personal injury settlement or some sort of settlement that were not cashed, and she was asking what to do with them. And a caller had a very good point where you can actually said you can see if they were submitted to the state. And sometimes a bank or an insurance company is holding money, whether it's life insurance proceeds or money for interest or something that was never claimed. And you can go to the Illinois State Treasurer's Unclaimed Property page. It's actually very easy to use. You go to IllinoisTreasurer.gov. And it's really interesting. You just put in your name, you put in your address, and you put in whatever information you have, and it will pull up if your name appears on that list. And I've done that occasionally. And I just got a check for $2,000. It was in my name. It was from something, interest in a bank account or something.
Wow.
Like from 8 years ago. And I had no idea, but it was a nice little surprise. And actually, they tell you that the state treasurer has $3 billion of unclaimed money. So it's not like this is just an unusual thing. A lot of people out there will have money, and maybe they just aren't aware of it. So thank you, listener, for giving me that suggestion. It's a good one. Speaking of found money, did you see this case where this reality show called Storage Wars, where people buy a storage unit?
Yeah, I love that show.
Yeah, people, they don't pay their rent, so now they're for sale or they're auction. And some guy bought a storage unit for $500, and he goes into it. There's a safe, and it has $7.5 million in cash. This is like your dream come true, right?
Yeah.
And so what happens is the attorney for the people who owned, who rented it at the time, reached out and said, "We want our money. We'll give you $600,000 if you give us our 7.5." They said, "No, double that. Make it 1.2, and you have a deal." And apparently, that's what the deal is: that the people who left that money in there. Now, tell me how you leave that kind of money in, but you can't pay your lousy, stinking monthly dues.
Right. Well, here's my thought on this. So I thought 1.2 million wasn't enough, that it should be 50-50.
That's what a lot of people are saying.
But here's what I realized from looking at that article is that one of the attorneys said, or the storage war guy said, that when there's that kind of money in cash in a storage unit, it often means it's associated in some way with crime.
Right.
So
exactly.
When someone offers you money, even if it's at 1.2, you might just want to take it.
Well,
something bad could end up happening.
It could seriously happen. And you don't want to be looking over your shoulder for the rest of your life wondering if it's Al Chapo or somebody did something to get that money that probably wasn't above board.
Probably not.
What you're saying.
I wonder if that person who owned the garage was related to the grandma who had the checks.
Oh.
Maybe it was her ex-husband. They just weren't good with finances.
They just
left money everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, here's go on. Honestly, one thing. The thing with Storage Wars also, which made me, when I saw the story, I was like, is this just another way to get publicity? Like, is this even true?
I wondered that too.
Because, I've read stories that they plant the stuff ahead of time in those units. And so in the series, when someone's bidding ahead of time, the producers know what's been planted in there so that they can then go to the experts. So if that's true and that's all staged, then I wonder how much of this is staged, because reality TV is an oxymoron in many ways.
Well, and there's no duty on behalf of television, to be honest, right?
None.
I mean, it's not like there's some kind of like truth in television rule that says that you, because I thought the same thing. I really did. I wonder now how many new people are going to be watching that show because it's so exciting that someone found $7.5 million.
Right. And also from my own personal experience of working on television shows.
Yes, you have a lot of experience.
I've seen how shows can get, as the term is, produced up. You know, where like contestants on game shows are primed. They're not told what to do, but they're cast because people in the show, the producers kind of have a hunch of where their philosophy is when it comes to risk taking and other things like that.
I guess we always have to remember it's television and it's entertainment.
That's right.
That's right. Yeah. Very, very interesting. But, you know, I guess I've been asked by people, you know, my friends are like, hey, you know, what's the legalities? And, you know, clearly if you buy a unit, you bought it. So there's no reason that he had to give that money.
It's suspicious almost that they would give any of it back.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Really? Are they maybe, people are that good-hearted? I mean,
maybe it's not good-hearted. Maybe it's like what you said, or the lawyer could have come up with some creative argument to say that there's a mistake of fact, and this is kind of a bad legal argument to say that when the person defaulted, you know, had they known or there could be some argument. It could go to court and it could spend thousands of time, of hours in court, and then you hire a lawyer. And so these people now don't have their 7.5 and they can't pay their fees and now they can't pay a lawyer, so they might lose. So
I'm sure it got ugly.
There's compromise.
I would imagine the attorney for whoever had claimed that money would say, listen, here's your offer. I'm not going past 1.2. You want to take it to court, we'll eat that money up in court and you're not going to get anything if you want to do that.
That could be your choice. And now that brings me to another question, which is, what is your obligation when you find money? There was another story on CNN this morning. It was a feel-good story. He was a young man who was paying off his student loans. He's going to Las Vegas. He had like $60 in his wallet, and he lost his wallet. And someone mailed him his wallet back and gave him an extra $40 and said, I hope you have fun in Vegas, or have fun, or hope this helps or something. And it was just a nice feel-good story because this person not only got his wallet back, which that's the big deal to me, is having to cancel all your credit cards and worry that someone has your identity, but he got a little extra cash. So the point is, what is your obligation when you find valuables or money?
That's a great question.
And we've seen this over the years. And in Illinois, they actually have a law, and it has the word estray in it, E-S-T-R-A-Y, which is a word that we don't really use in our vocabularies. But it says, essentially, that you have an obligation to try to find the owner. So that if the wallet says Vic Cohen, and I'm sitting across from three people, I have an obligation to say, is anyone here named Vic Cohen? And then if it's yours, obviously.
This is the thing that drives me crazy. So you said, your words, it's a feel-good story. And I agree, it is a feel-good story. But here's where I've just been kind of messed with in my head. We have feel-good stories that end up not being feel-good stories, like that homeless guy who supposedly gave his last $20 to help this couple who had no gas. And it turns out all three of them, it looks like, were in cahoots. And they had that GoFundMe campaign for, 400 grand they built people out of. And that was the feel-good story of the moment. So is this one the feel-good story or not? Yeah.
I agree. But just know that it's not finders keepers. Just people think that's the law.
I didn't know that.
No, you have to take some effort and you have to maybe post it in a newspaper or call the police department. But after a certain number of days, if no one claims it, then it becomes yours. And we didn't get to the bad Christmas carols, but Ben is going to post them on our website. There's some really bad ones. Duck Dynasty came up with one called Harry Christmas. Oh. And you have to hear John Denver, Daddy, Don't Get Drunk Again for Christmas or something. So we'll post them and you can listen to them in the privacy of your own home. I hope everyone has a wonderful holiday season. If you want to call me at my office for any reason during the holidays except to get you out of jail free, it's 312-332-7800. Thanks, Vic Cohen. Thanks, Andrea Metcalf. And thank you, Ida Pigott.